This is the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour. I'm Ross Chambliss. Political polling, those surveys about how people feel about an issue or a candidate, are a regular component of the news each week. Polls can sometimes reveal important trends in public attitudes or push public officials to address some issues more than others. But polls can also be flawed and even wrong. No one in Utah knows more about the process of political polling than Dan Jones. He's the founder of the polling firm Dan Jones & Associates, the market research and public opinion firm, and for many years he was also a professor of political science at the University of Utah. Today on the program, we are airing a conversation with Dan Jones and Jason Perry, the director of the Hinckley Institute of Politics, about the ins and outs of public opinion polling. They'll address issues such as the importance of how questions are asked, what is meant by margin of error, how has polling evolved in the age of the cell phone, what is push polling, and when have polls got it wrong, and when have they gotten public opinions right? This forum was recorded last week on September 14th, and the conversation was moderated by the editor of the Salt Lake Tribune, Jennifer Napier Pierce.
Welcome to everyone. Jason Perry, director of the Hinckley Institute of Politics, vice president of government relations at the University of Utah. He's also former chief of staff to Governor Gary Herbert, and we are in business together. The Hinckley Institute and the Salt Lake Tribune embarked on a polling partnership earlier this year, and it's been terrific. Welcome, Jason.
And remember when you used to work here?
I do remember that. I worked here for 2 months and 10 days.
Those were great days.
They were great days. Dan Jones is also with us. He's founder and principal of Dan Jones & Associates, which has been in the polling business for more than 50 years. He taught for many years here at the University of Utah as professor of political science. I had the great honor of taking one of his classes. He has a very long-standing relationship with the Hinckley Institute. And Dan, it's great to have you as well.
Thank you.
So I guess I'll open with the very general question, why does polling matter? Dan Jones, you've probably pondered this question over the years. Why does polling matter?
Well, I think polling matters because when the Declaration of Independence was written by Thomas Jefferson, that it was really important in 1776 to declare independence from the mother country, that he had to have the consent of the governed. The British had lost that. And how do you determine consent? And so polling has been with us clear back in the time of Jefferson, Madison and Adams, and it has really grown to be a major part of our elections. But I must start out by saying, those who live by the polls will die by them. They should be an indication of how the people feel, but not necessarily do what they ask us. People might not know what the answer might be. The reason people back, many of them didn't get to vote, especially women, and those who did not own property, because most of the founders felt the masses were asses and didn't know better. The polling, the longer I polled, maybe this year is an exception, the longer I polled, I'm amazed how bright the American public is. And in the long run, they make the right decision. But how do you find out? Well, you poll, and then the moment of truth comes out at the ballot box. What kind of a year will this be in 53 days?
Jason, why do polls matter?
Well, I have to first say just how great it is to be here with the great Dan Jones. He's not going to like any of it, but he is amazing. As you all know, there's no more respected voice, certainly in the state of Utah, but around the country and by every elected official. So hopefully everyone knows just how great it is to be able to hear from the Yoda of polling. That's what I'm calling it now. But if I may, for a second, on the polls, true. One true fact about this is politicians love the polls and they hate the polls. And if you start talking about the power of political polling, I'm going to invoke a Schoolhouse Rock. It's because knowledge is power. Understanding what people are thinking about certain issues is just very important. And I'm going to reference this a couple of times. I brought this, Dan, for those listening, I brought this 8-ball.
I wondered what the Magic 8-Ball was doing.
Yeah, you all see this for those listening. This is the Magic 8-Ball. You know, when I got one of these when I was just a kid right there, you all know you asked the question, right? And if you were a political candidate and you have an issue, you want to know how the public feels about any particular item, this is kind of what you've got, right? You know, is Dan Jones the best pollster? Oh, without a doubt it says.
How
as I
bad.
Asked the question. But this is kind of what you have. And for polls, as I have been working on many, many campaigns over the years, you need to know what people are thinking about particular issues. And you can ask the 8-ball, or you can go to Dan Jones. That's where the power of polling is. That's why they matter. We have officials that are elected to represent the public. They represent all of us. And one of the ways they get to know what we think about a particular issue is to ask them. And there are lots of ways, which we'll go through today, to find out the answers to these questions that we have. But you want to go to someone reputable like Dan Jones. If you want to know what the public thinks about an issue, if you're about to vote or if you're about to put a policy into effect, you just have to talk to them. And that's what's so important about these particular polls. It is so much better than asking the random 8-ball. You really can find what people think in the polls. And then it's powerful information. You know what they think, you know what they don't think, you know what they like and what they don't like, and you know where the population is going with a great pollster like Dan Jones. That's why it's so important.
Jason, take us behind the scenes. For those who have not worked for a political campaign, how do candidates use polls? Internal polling, I mean, what's the practical use of a poll?
Well, there...
Go ahead.
Do you want to start
you
first?
Go ahead.
No, it sounds like you had something great.
No.
Okay, you'll fix what I say then.
Yeah.
There are many ways that politicians use polls. Sometimes it's a sword, sometimes it's a shield, but always it's instructive in some way. When we read in the paper about certain polls, we get high-level numbers. You know, do you like Hillary Clinton? Do you like Donald Trump? And we get this big number that shows. But the way politicians use these is really where the magic is. It's in the crosstabs. You want to find out who is answering the question in what way. It's great that one candidate is sitting with a 9 or a 10-point lead, but how are they really doing? And so that's the practical part of these polls. I brought up one that we did recently with the Tribune, just talk about this for a second. But if you start talking about the demographics of the people you're talking to. So it's great I'm sitting at a 45% in the state of Utah, but who really loves me? That's really the question you got to go. And so sometimes you go through the age. You go from all the voters, from how old they are up to sometimes our last poll that we did, over 50. You start talking about their religious affiliation, their party affiliation, their ideology, their education. You put all of these together and you start getting a very good look at what you need to focus on. Right now, you're starting to see campaign commercials focused at certain target audiences. When you start looking at our 4th congressional race, I'm guessing as you start seeing some ads from Mia Love and you start seeing them from Doug Owens, I'm thinking some of those are driven by the crosstabs. If you look at the last poll on the president, you look at whether or not the Republicans like Donald Trump or the Democrats like Hillary Clinton. Turns out they do. But for the younger group, 22% of the LDS population was still undecided. Here in the state of Utah. And you say, wow, maybe Hillary Clinton will say, I think maybe I'll write an op-ed piece in the paper here in the state of Utah to address that particular group. You use the crosstabs so you understand what population you need to work on, or maybe what part of the group you don't have to worry about as much.
Okay, well,
Dan?
They do use the crosstabs. Now, make sure you really understand that. That is like a person's religion. And the level of their religiosity. Because you can get usually we get from 65 to 70% LDS in Utah, but not all of them are active. The very active are usually very conservative. You're somewhat active, and those who are not active at all are usually quite liberal. And so you lump them together, that isn't necessarily how the LDS feel. But the thing about the LDS is they turn out and vote. But the fastest growing religion I got in Utah is none. And they will show up to vote. And what's so hard for us targeting? We target groups. Now, one of the things that's happening, I assume that Hillary Clinton is really sick with pneumonia. Well, the President of the United States has stepped in. Up until now, the black voter has been very lackadaisical. They don't care for Trump, and they're not excited about Hillary. But they loved Mr. Obama. That elected Mr. Obama over Mitt Romney. And boy, did he target him and go door to door. 94% of the blacks voted for Mr. Obama. That won't be with the way with Hillary. Two things. Many of them won't vote. They'll have a terribly low turnout, and those who do vote aren't really excited about either Hillary or Mr. Trump, and certainly not Mr. Johnson. Now, polling matters to Mr. Johnson, because if he can get 16% in those eight very, very important states, starting with Nevada, and you go on to Colorado and so forth, and you go on into Ohio in that area, well, then he'll get to debate. See, there are people who think the election, that neither one will get 270 electoral votes, that is half of the 538. Well, if they don't, the election goes to the House. Not each individual in the House gets the right to vote. If they get one vote per state, and they take the top three candidates, see how important that is? Tell me polling's not important. Tell me the poll that they did to decide who is going to get to debate in the four congressional districts. Not one third party got enough. I'm not sure I agree with that in my research. But they're not going to be in the debate. Debates will make a difference. You don't think September 26th debate, if she is well enough to debate? Now, it's really important that Mr. Obama came to her aid, and that might stabilize. What they had to stop was Hillary's bleeding. Honest, she's been going down 2 and 4 and so, not only nationwide, but in those key states. So Mr. Obama's in the game. If the election were today, I think Hillary would not only win in the Electoral College, but in the popular vote. But go back. Mr. Romney thought he was going to win. Did you ever find out why Mr. Gallup or the Gallup organization quit polling the election? Because they were wrong. Broke their hearts. It was the same back in 1936 with the famous Literary Digest poll, 1948 with Harry Truman up against Thomas E. Dewey, and There have been times, how'd you like to be Al Gore? Think about it. Is that going to happen? This has really been a chaotic year. But the thing you need to watch is not only the Electoral College and the popular vote, but who's going to win the United States Senate. That is a major key, I promise you. And it could go either way. How do I know? Because I poll it. But many of the people can't even give you the name of their senator. They can't. Polling isn't meant for the naive and the apathetic and the lethargic. And one lady says, no, I'm not naive, apathetic, or lethargic. I just don't know, care, or give a damn, and hang up. And so the incidence level of getting a complete interview is much, much tougher. Honest people, it is much tougher polling today than it's ever been in all the years that I've polled.
You're listening to the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour on KCPW, and that was Dan Jones, the founder of Dan Jones & Associates, the political polling firm. Today we are broadcasting a conversation about the power of political polling between Dan Jones and Jason Perry, the director of the Hinckley Institute of Politics. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour on KCPW. I'm Ross Chambliss. On this program, we record and broadcast the many engaging lectures, debates, and panel discussions held at the Hinckley Institute of Politics at the University of Utah, and we replay them, unedited, mostly in their entirety, as a public service. Today, we're airing a conversation about the power and the art of political polling and surveying of public opinion. This was recorded last week with Dan Jones, the longtime political pollster and former professor of political science at the University of Utah, and also with Jason Perry, the director of the Hinckley Institute of Politics. And the conversation was moderated by Jennifer Napier Pierce, the editor of the Salt Lake Tribune.
Can you talk a little bit about the art and science behind polling? You know, there were times in the very recent past where home phones were the standard. Now, who has a home phone in here? I mean, I don't. You've got one. Congratulations. Well, so you've probably, Dan, had to modify the way that you are conducting polls. How has it changed over the years?
You want to take it?
No, please.
Okay. We do still do land phones. But they're about 45%. 41% of the people only have cell phones. Then my problem is, see, they can tell the name of the organization or person it's calling. That's why you got to have a good name. And so you look at your incidents, like, oh, this is credible poll, I'll go ahead and answer it on the cell phone. I got to be honest with you. I think those I've interviewed on the cell phone seem better informed this year than those with the land phone. Then we also send out two people and have them fill out a ballot and send it back to us. Yeah. We don't do any more than 20% of those. 20% of our sample is done online. And it's so much harder today because you can start voting the first week of October. And there's always an October surprise. It's going to be tough. And there could be some major mistakes made this year. I hope we're not one of them.
Jason, the way that polls are conducted is different. Mm-hmm. And questions matter, right? I mean, you have to present questions, yes, in a way that are clear, not biased, and something that people can respond to quickly.
That's exactly right. These polls are very interesting in terms of how they're drafted and who delivers them. I just want to say one thing about Dan. When the caller ID comes up, it says Dan Jones and Associates. I know, having worked out there in the political world, people say that's not necessarily a political party right there. That's just a reputable person calling, so we'll take those as opposed to some of those you get. Many people get calls already. How many of you in this room have had a pollster call already this year, this cycle?
Wow.
Wow, huge
That's
number.
That's a lot.
The Dan Jones polls were the best.
Wait a minute. Did you respond?
How many of you?
Or did you go click?
So those of you listening, a good portion of the crowd raised their hand. They got a poll. How many of you just clicked? Said, no, I'm not answering. But what's interesting on this is the outputs are only as good as the inputs. And when you're talking about questions, which I'll get to in a second too, when we start looking at those crosstabs and who the pollsters are calling, it's very important to look at those. Because you can do a survey inside the state of Utah, and if you somehow, as you start really just getting phone calls in Utah County, that may be a different set of responses that you're going to get up in Davis County, other parts of the state, which is why when those of you who are working on campaigns one day start doing some polling, you're going to want to make sure you have someone that understands the state that they are doing a survey in. Because if they don't, you may come out with a number that is not an accurate indication at all, which maybe in a minute you can talk about your bellwether areas here, the districts that you came up with many years ago. But when we are drafting polling questions, it is essential that that they come off as being unbiased and they are not leading in any way, so that you can get a true flavor for the response itself. And usually you can hear things. Have you heard the phrase push polls before? Have you heard that? Many times some of you may get a phone call from someone, usually on a campaign, right, Dan, doing a push poll where they will ask you a question. It'll be something like, do you think it's appropriate for us to coddle criminals? Well, no, I don't love coddling criminals necessarily, but I've seen questions like that come both on my telephone and through my email. You can definitely draft a question in a way that gives you the answer that you want. And unfortunately, sometimes people go out with those and they say, well, look at, I have this kind of support in this particular area, but it was entirely based on the questions that we ask as well. So that's why when we are going through polls, and certainly we appreciate it, the one that we do with you, with your Tribune, we make sure every one of those is giving a completely unbiased answer. We spend a lot of time on the questions. No one should ever do a poll where the thing we spend the least amount of time on is the questions themselves, because that will ruin the entire poll.
Do you have anything to add there, Dan, on questions?
I will not do push polling. I've had many opportunities to do that. And one they'll do on push polling is someone's private life. If you knew that so-and-so had had an affair, so now how will you vote? That's push polling. Or cheated in a business deal or things like that. I won't do those. And probably one of your best questions is an open-ended. What do you think is the greatest issue facing the state of Utah today? Now, the state of Utah, and people are smart. They know that education is number one issue in Utah, but it isn't nationally. And you're going to see pretty soon, what is the difference of the issues in Utah and the issues nationally? Then what affects the presidential race? Is it the national issues and how they stand on military, terrorism, or do they vote nationally because of the statewide issue? And so you have to be really knowledgeable about your issues. And so the push polling is much more common than you know. And someone especially who's trying to go and raise funds, because they'll say, look, if you're within 10%, I'll give you the $2,500 for your campaign. So they'll get questions to make sure they're going to be within that margin of error or level. I won't do that.
Okay.
Yes.
I think anyone who is looking at polls, and when you're reading in the paper or whatever you're doing on a campaign, you should sit down and look at the methodology. When I am asked about certain polls, when members of the press call and they say, what do you think about this? The first thing I do is I go into the poll and I look at who asked the questions, where did they ask them, and were they legitimate questions? because it's just something that everyone should think about every single time. And if you are any of you are ever commissioning a poll, the methodology is just absolutely key, because some members of the public might not have a chance to go out and look at some of those things. So if you're asked to look at them, you're writing a paper about them, you're researching them, you have to get to that, because there are a lot of polls out there. 75% of the people can tell you that. See, I just made that up. I have no idea what that number is. But that's the thing. You can make up numbers in all kinds of ways just based on the questions themselves. And that's when you talk about the power of the polls. It can be a huge negative if you're not looking at it the right way as well, if you're not scrutinizing every one of them.
Dan, you mentioned earlier a few instances through history where the pollsters got it wrong. So pollsters are fallible. Can you tell us a time when you got it wrong?
Yeah.
Those are the easy ones to remember.
You told me you were going to be nice to me today.
But anyway, I said it in the nicest possible way.
That's okay. I'd say the hardest one I ever did was in election between Congressman Hansen and Gunn McKay. And I'd been Gunn
McKay's
pollster.
Is this in the 80s? When was that?
1986. And I had to go on and predict, as soon as the polls closed, who was going to win. And I was within error that I predicted Gunn McKay. And Jim Hansen spent the rest of the night just humiliating me on television. We've had lunch since that time. We didn't have to cook it. It cooked by itself. But anyway, I want to say that he's a good man, but so was Gunn McKay.
And so what happened?
His wife was so, so disappointed. But I was within error. But so was Gallup on Mitt Romney. But he said that Mitt Romney would win, and Obama did. And they don't ask, were you within error? No, they say, who do you predict? See, I got to face that this year. These polls could be well within error and get the wrong person in close election. Hey, how would you like to do District 4? You try it. You try to do the... I don't think the Hillary race and the race between her and Trump, I don't think that's over nationwide or in Utah yet.
I was going to ask Dan about one of them, which first I should say about the margin of error. Whenever Dan asks me how I'm doing, I'm saying great, plus or minus 3.28%. I wonder about the 1988 race, Bangeter and Ted Wilson, because that did not go at all as polls were kind of predicting, right? And that was a very interesting one. We dealt with a pretty serious tax issue.
No, I got that one right.
I know you did, but the candidates didn't think it was right.
Yeah, but it was within 1%.
Uh-huh.
See, Ted Wilson only lost by less than 3%. But I took a poll down to Norm Bangeter. Norm Bangeter is one of the most honest persons I have ever, ever worked with. And he lived, he had a house down in St. George or Bloomington. And I said, well, bring the poll down and have breakfast with me. And I took a poll down about this time of the year. And he said, what does it say? I said, well, it's got a 28-point margin. And he said, oh, am I that far ahead? And I said, no, Ted Wilson is. I didn't get breakfast. I didn't. I drove all the way back. But eventually, he caught up with Ted. And Ted used to be director of the Hinckley. Mm-hmm. Marvelous guy, but the momentum went away. And let me say, in that election, a Republican was more likely to vote than a Democrat. And Ted Wilson was a solid Democrat. And Norm Bangor, after that, Norm Bangor had a third party run against him. Remember Merrill Cook? Yeah. So third parties can really, really make a difference. But I don't see that in Utah. I don't. This time. Yeah, I was wrong.
Well, what do you take from that, Dan? I mean, were there lessons? Are there lessons to be drawn from when something goes bad?
Yeah. What really happened on that one where I went with Gunn McKay? Gunn McKay usually runs very, very well in particular areas. A Democrat does. It used to be Tooele voted Democratic. It doesn't anymore. And so I was short in one particular county. And that was enough to throw it to Jim Hansen. So Jim just barely won. But I remember how hard it was and how hard polling is on the family. And they just don't understand. And I know Chelsea Clinton can't understand why people say, "I hate Hillary." I've had the word hate more in this election cycle than any time that I've ever polled. And I myself do not understand it. Trump brings a lot of it on himself, but I don't see it with Hillary. But that's what they say, is we hate her. And the men favor Trump. Women favor Hillary, but not enough in Utah. So right now, Trump's ahead of Hillary in Utah. That'll be major if Trump wins in this state.
Jason, do you want to add anything about when you get it wrong? I mean, as someone who commissions polls, that's like your nightmare.
So it is. And there are varying degrees of how upset one gets. That's why we work with Dan. So we don't get that to happen. But if you're a candidate and you have commissioned a poll and the question comes out wrong, it impacts your entire strategy. You think you have captured a group, and say, like if you're talking about the governor, for example, and you say, I'm sitting at 50-60% with anyone over 50 years old. I think I'm good with that. And then you find out that's not the case at all. Or you start looking at favorables. And sometimes on political candidates, I always like to come out and say, you start talking about the attributes of your candidate. And say, trustworthiness, that's one of those things sometimes we talk about. How trustworthy is this particular person? And if that poll comes out and they say, 70% of the people think this person is trustworthy, and I'm the opponent, I'm going to say, well, maybe I'm going to attack this particular, we wouldn't attack, would we? I'm probably going to have some commercials, I'm going to do something other things that goes at something else that I can find. But if it turns out that my poll is wrong and this is the one area I just cannot beat this particular candidate, I spend a whole lot of time and money and sometimes I end up losing that race. That's how important that is, because the politicians, and Dan knows this because he gets it oftentimes, if Dan is commissioning a poll, I know from the time I work with Governor Herbert, does he call you every single day, say, is my poll done? He might not. When you're talking about the congressional candidates, I know with our pollster, because I worked with these candidates, every single night they wake up saying, I wonder what people are saying about me. There's this hand-wringing the entire time. Every morning they call up and they call Dan Jones. They say, how many did you get through last night? What are they saying? And usually he says, I'm not done. Right? That's what I found out you did after a while. He said, I'm not done. I'll tell you at the end. But if the poll itself has a flaw in the methodology or in the questioning, I can spend a lot of time on money and something I really shouldn't have. In the end, I can actually lose because of that information.
Yeah, I need to do something more recently. I was wrong in the race between Gary Herbert and Jonathan Johnson. But that was among delegates. Delegates are almost impossible to poll. And they're highly opinionated and very, very protective. They are very aggressive. And going into the convention, I had Gary Herbert winning. But also that a convention, you have a presentation. And Jonathan Johnson really turned the delegates on. He really did. How much did he switch? Maybe 10%. Well, the governor was supposed to win. But Gary Herbert didn't come after me. He met with me that was on a Saturday. I met with him on Monday, and he said, where do we go from here? And now they go to a primary. And we got the primary right. But there's a lot more people voting. All the people of the state can vote. But I think you'll be shocked on how few people vote. Did you know in the primary, as exciting as it was, 20% of the people, registered voters, turned out? 70% told me they would. Why do they lie to me about voting? Why? So I don't put, do you plan to vote? Because I know they're going to say yes. I use other things on how interested they are in the election, how likely they will vote, because did they vote in the past two elections? Those are called your likely voters. There's a heck of a difference between a registered voter and a likely voter, and really listen to that when the polls come out. So I'm giving you some trade secrets, but it's more difficult today. And the other is, we make it so easy now to register. Did you know you can register the day of the election? Didn't used to be that way. And then, so then you can have a terrible time. And they didn't count that night the people who registered that day. And I remember there was a real, real close election, and they had to be able to go back and reassess and look at the election. And you cannot be off more than one vote per district to get that. And he lost by 6 votes. 6. And yet, Utahns don't even know it. But a major, major former Speaker of the House lost. The system today is, we're trying to make it so easy to vote. I think it's virtuous to vote. But I can't determine who's going to vote. I'd like to, but I still can't.
You're listening to the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour on KCPW. We'll be back in a moment. This is the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour on KCPW. I'm Ross Chambliss. If you're just tuning in today, we are airing a conversation that was recorded last week with Dan Jones, the longtime Utah pollster and founder of the public opinion research firm Dan Jones & Associates, and with Jason Perry, the director of the Hinckley Institute of Politics. They're speaking about the art and the science of political polling and the role that polling plays in our political election system. The conversation was moderated by Jennifer Napier Pierce, the editor of the Salt Lake Tribune.
I know you want to get to some questions, so get them ready, and there will be a microphone going around. So wait for the mic. But as you're getting ready, Dan, explain for the non-mathematicians out there what the margin of error means. How do you calculate that?
Well, there's a formula, and
you don't have to give it all away, but just generally.
No, I probably couldn't anyway. The other is it on the size of sample. Let's do a 600 sample. By formula, if the entire sample is representative of the same type of individuals, registered voters, who are eligible to vote, then the error for 600 is plus or minus 4%. That means that Gary Herbert could win, we say he's going to win 54 to 46, that could be up to 58 down to 42. That's right. Plus or minus 4% error. The feds won't accept any error greater than 5%. But I won't go into Logan, Utah, and do Logan with less than 200 interviews, because that's plus or minus 7.5%. I have them all memorized.
What's the next tier up, and what does it go down to from 600?
Well, usually 600. I've got to do 800 because I've got four congressional districts, and I won't do less than 200 in a congressional district. So I've got to do a total of 800. Grand total together for 800 is 2.6% error. But that's with everything being equal and going right and people not lying to you. Let me tell you, poll results are only accurate at the time they're taken. The most accurate polls are exit polls. Clients also need to know an election is shaping up well in advance of election day. And so what really is changing that is voting by mail. I've already voted. And it looks like to me there are going to be more vote by mail. And I promise you there's going to be an October surprise, a late October surprise. The other is that polling is very, very important in a timeline. If you're doing for a candidate, it is very difficult to be more than 2 weeks in the field because opinion, many of them, will have changed. We try to be done within, and we can get maybe 130 a night, 130. And every night I poll, except Sunday. And at 9 o'clock we quit. Utahns go to bed earlier. You can poll in New York clear up to 11. And also in California, but not in Utah. So there's a lot of nuances that you just don't understand.
Jason?
I thought I would mention, as one who hires people to do polls, you all just need to know the more you sample, the more expensive it is. I'll just remind you of that, all right? Because that often is something we overlook, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, say if you were commissioning a poll, you say, I'm great with 400, but some of these issues are just too important. And it may be worth the extra cost to get a bigger sample. That's just something to remember on your campaigns one day as well, because a candidate may say, I'd rather be cheaper, but probably rather be right.
Yeah.
When the legislature is in session, we usually do 400 samples. That's plus or minus 5% error. But that's the most the feds will accept.
Okay, let's get to some audience questions.
My name's Bradley. I actually have a question for Mr. Jones. Do you find the more local you get that it's harder to poll? I mean, I sit in here thinking a lot about the local legislative races, and we're talking a lot about the governor's race and congressional races. Is it harder to poll for, say, just a local House race or a local Senate race?
Well, it depends on how much coverage they've had on a local race. A person who runs very, very well as a Democrat is Patrice Arendt, but she has great name ID. See, what you want to do first is go out and find out their approval rating. Do you know Patrice Arendt? Yes. Can you tell me what party she is, a Democrat? Can you tell me she's in the Utah House or Senate? It's the House. All right, you strongly approve, somewhat approve, somewhat disapprove, strongly disapprove. Now, we don't use don't know, Now, for her to really be viable, her approval rating has to be 3-1 over her negative. You get 3-1, you go ahead and run. But now, can you overcome approval rating? Sure. Get material, go door to door. But don't leave more than 3 issues because they can't remember. They can't remember more than 3. And so you leave that with them and then give it some incubation time and then go back, and generally your approval rating will go up unless the media has been saying things that are detrimental like they are about Trump or so forth today.
So do you see in those local elections that a poll could actually end up hurting that person's name recognition, or just because a poll annoyed someone? I hope that makes sense. Do you see that it could actually end up hurting by polling?
Yeah, but personally, I like to do legislative polls. So you have 29 senators, and you have 75 in the House. But personally, I like to do them if they have name ID. Speaker of the House Hughes has great name ID where he's from. See, the Speaker still has to represent a particular area. So does the President Neuhauser in the Senate. They protect a particular area.
So I was going to give one comment to your point, too. If you're commissioning the poll and some of the answers come back in a way that you were not really happy with, you don't have to release those. Remember that too, all right? So sometimes that's the case too. It's your poll. When Dan does a poll for someone, he releases the information to you. It is your information as well. I haven't had too many experiences where people were unhappy about being asked and therefore it had a negative impact. But sometimes you find the warts in your campaign as well through a poll that you've commissioned, and that is helpful. But you don't necessarily need to broadcast any of it.
It's called internal polls, right?
Polling is
internal
expensive.
Polling.
Internal polls, yes. And there's tracking polls, too, we didn't talk about too much, Dan.
Yeah, but I'm going to be doing tracking. And what you do, you start out with a base of 400. And then the next night, you knocked off 100 and bring on a new 100 and put it in the total of the 400. And you can tell if opinion changes. And especially among the 100. But see, the error on 100 is much higher. But if you mix it with the 400, then it's plus or minus 5%. By the way, on the last election I did in Salt Lake, I got it right to the percent. I did, I was lucky. But I did because I did the tracking. I tracked every night. And that's hard on your people because they got to be accurate. And, how do you know they don't make them up? Because we monitor. And the person never knows when they're being monitored. But every interviewer gets monitored every night. Not every, but they don't know which one. But I have 2 people. That's all they do is monitor to make sure those surveys are done.
That's a quick question to the group. Would you be more likely to respond to a survey if you have an actual person on the phone as opposed to somewhere you push a bunch of numbers? How many of you just hang up when it's just push a number? A bunch of you, it looks like.
Okay.
Are you more likely to answer the questions if a real person is asking the questions? Yeah, clearly the audience feels that way. True.
Those are called robocalls.
We're giving you all the terminology.
Boy, you can do 2,000 in one night. 2,000. I'd die and go to heaven.
Yeah. Another question?
You've talked about this a little bit, but I'm curious to hear more about what about this presidential election has made it so difficult to poll and to predict the final outcome in the presidential election?
Dan?
Well, because Republicans usually vote for Republicans, but not even the governor can endorse the Republican nominee. And so,
although he says he's going to vote for him.
Okay, here comes the editing. But anyway, I wanted to know.
She is the editor of the Tribune.
Oh, boy. it truly, truly has been the hardest. It sounds funny, but in Idaho and Utah, they got to know Mitt Romney. The people in the South and all that never really got to know Mitt Romney. And we out here didn't really get to know Mr. Obama, but he was an incumbent. And that's a lot different, so. But again, for the presidential race, it's the hardest one I've ever tried to do. Jeez, and I go clear back. My first one was Kennedy and Nixon. And I got it right. Yeah, I did. So the Salt Lake Tribune asked me to come and help them. And I got 2 out of 3. But anyway, no, I did. I became. But see, in those days, it was face-to-face. Every poll. And George Gallup took me for a ride one day and said, Dan, I'll never do telephone polling. But he did. When Archibald Cox got fired by Nixon, he did a telephone poll. 90% of the polls today are done by telephone. Now, you got cell phones and land phone, but that's the way they're done. Now watch that monkey. That's too bad they call it a monkey one. And see what it comes out this Tuesday. Has Obama stopped the bleeding for Hillary Clinton? I don't see Trump going down, but I see possibly if she or. And come October 1st, if he's within 3% of her, watch out.
Jason, did you have something to add?
I think that was good.
You're good. Okay, let's take one more question.
Hi, my name is Annette Harris. I'm curious about your thoughts about some polling companies who have said that they'll be releasing real-time polling information on Election Day for the first time. I think the first time in a while. I'm just curious about if you think that will affect the election or what kind of effect that will have.
You mean that they release returns before the election's over?
Yeah, like real-time polling information on Election Day. What do you think about it, though?
I won't go on the air until 8 o'clock.
Why won't you do it, Dan?
Because I think you can influence it. Yeah, but yet I hate to see laws made to stop. And see, what they go is on ratings. And CBS and NBC and ABC and whatever, they're really, really locked. They get on the number. A rating is of all the televisions, how many are watching. Okay, but a share is of those that you're watching that station. And so you try to get the highest rating, and that's what they pay commercials on. That's what they charge for. So if they can get a leg up and predict it's 6 p.m. and we haven't voted, that's what they'll do, and I think it's wrong. I will not do that. I won't come on the air until 8 o'clock.
Jason, do you have anything to say about the real-time?
Well, that is the concern, is when you're doing the real-time analysis of the numbers, you know, it's great in the state of Utah. I say, we got Emory County in, and one candidate did exceptionally well. I say, well, that's a very small part of the state of Utah, and really you're relying on a segment of the returns that just cannot really tell you what's happening. And for someone who watches these returns, often it's concerning that the people will be watching those things and saying, you know, one particular candidate is sitting at 65%. Maybe I'm not going to swing by the voting box after work today and cast my vote. Looks like it's already done. That is a huge concern. That's what sometimes happens in my analysis with some of these real-time results as well. They just, it's that moment from a particular area that you may or may not know.
Yeah, California will stay home if you've already predicted from New York who's going to win. They'll stay home in groves. And see, California is 54 electoral votes. And it still has the most. New York doesn't. So there are those who really feel this would be close in the Electoral College. If the election were today, Hillary would get over 279, and it only takes 270. I have Trump at 171. But this week he could go up. In those other ones that are very, very, very close. See, why do they call them the 8 real important states? Because they're within 5%. They could go either way, 5%. That's why they're talking about those states. And no Republican has ever won the presidency unless they win Ohio. You don't think that Trump people won't live there? But Ohio right now is going with Trump. Who would have guessed? See, that's why they wanted him to take Kasich. Because he would have carried Ohio. And Pence is doing okay. He's carrying him more than the vice presidential nominee for Hillary.
Jason? I'll add to that too, because particularly as we start seeing those real time and the results are coming out of the presidential candidates, you're starting to look at the state of Utah. I get worried because that's one of the people we're voting for is for the president of the United States. We have some serious races here in the state of Utah as well, of our congressional candidates to governor to our state school board. We have lots of people, and so some of the concerns sometimes is if you don't show up, it's not just the president of the United States you're deciding not to vote for. There are numerous candidates down ballot that really need your attention. So I hope that if you are watching those, you still show up because there are a lot of races to vote for.
Well, Tim Chambliss could tell you, and very, very astute he is in the political Utah arena, he is. But did you realize if Utah votes for Mr. Trump, just barely, all 6, see, you got 4 congressmen and 2 senators. When I took math, that's 6. They have to vote, all 6. Now, it's different in Maine and Nebraska. They vote by congressional district. We don't vote proportionally in the Electoral College. And I ask you, should we keep it? Should we keep the electoral? See, remember I told you the masses were asses? So that's why you elect electors to choose the best people. That's why they did that. I don't think it's changed much, especially when they look at this year.
Mostly you were just quoting someone saying that.
Yes, of course.
We're out of time, but I want to. I asked Dan a hard question, so Jason, I'm going to ask you a hard question. There are those, particularly within journalism, who say that polling, the horse race, that kind of reporting detracts from policy, from real issues. It creates confusion with the voter. How would you defend polling?
Did the polling confuse it? Takes
by focusing on the numbers and who's ahead instead of what they're saying, the content of their policy.
Well, there are questions you can ask about, and there are policies you can try to get some flavor for. When we do polls, that is one of the questions. But we always ask questions about the policies themselves. Sadly, in American politics, we talk about the candidates, and not very often do we get to the substance of the policies themselves. And I don't blame the polls for that, is the answer. The polls tell us things about the candidates themselves, but I always ask questions about the policies along with the presidential candidates themselves. My hope is that as we get into the presidential debates, and we're having the debate viewing parties here at Hinckley Institute, which we'd love for you to come. We'll feed you, talk about it, all right? Dan, you'll come join us, I'm sure. Hopefully start getting to the substance of some of the policies then, and as they do that, we'll start polling on those as well.
All right. Thank you very much. Please join me in thanking our guests today.
This program is made possible in part by the Hinckley Institute's Wayne Owens Fund. I'm Ross Chambliss, your humble curator and producer of this program. Thanks for listening.